For the most recent episode of The Monica Perez Show, please subscribe to The Monica Perez Show on your favorite podcasting platform. Tejas in Donbass is dead. Weinstein conviction overturned. TikTok ban passes. And more. The Monica Perez Show starts now. Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining me. It is Thursday, April 25th. It is 2 o'clock Pacific, 5 o'clock Eastern. You can join me on this live show on your favorite video streaming platform every Tuesday and Thursday at 2 o'clock Pacific, 5 o'clock Eastern. And I wanted to shout out Angry Tiger and Chris Graves. I was supposed to do a show with them last night. I was really looking forward to it. But I was sick as a dog, and I'm still a bit under the weather. So hopefully I will get through this show conveying all of the interesting stories in the news today without losing my voice again. Okay. So also, if you don't watch it live, you can see it, listen to it on the podcast feed right after the show. It goes right up. And if you want to hear that commercial free, join the premium feed on iTunes. I'm having a free trial right now. So 30 days commercial free. And then after that, it's $4.99 a month, less than a single newspaper. And of course, as I've said before, the beauty of that is that I will actually read that newspaper for you and tell you about it. So what was the first thing on the Wall Street Journal site today? Harvey Weinstein New York conviction overturned. And of course, I immediately got plenty of tweets saying that I had absolutely called this, just like Bill Cosby. These guys, obviously, I coined the term sacrificial wolf for these guys because they're awful. So they get no sympathy whatsoever. So when their rights are trampled or the sentence is ridiculously long, or they allow hearsay in and just don't follow the correct procedures at trial, nobody's really going to pound the table for them, except for I have. Although I was much more engaged with the Bill Cosby story than this one. This was too sordid for me to sort out. So I can't say that I cracked the code on what was going on. My first suspicion was that Harvey Weinstein, who's the Weinstein Company, big entertainment company with his brother, that it was already on the skids. So it was, that is true. And that this somehow changed the outcome for how they were going to liquidate their company or whatever. And I think it might have, I vaguely remember. I did not revisit that. I just wanted to hit a few highlights on this. So he got convicted in New York on two counts. One was third degree rape, which means you did not get consent, but it was not forced. And the other was a criminal sex act in which he forced himself on someone to give her oral sex. I mean, that's usually the opposite of what the rape would be, but the egregious, I think it was like a 26-year sentence. I mean, it's absolutely egregious. Some places don't even have third degree rape. He's also serving 16 years, or he will be in California. This was simultaneous. He was serving a sentence simultaneously in New York, but he still has this conviction in California. Conviction was overturned in New York. He has to go back to trial. Who knows what will come of that? And I don't know where the appeals process stands in California. But for me, I not only like didn't think this whole thing was legit, I'm not convinced he's in jail. I'm not even sure of that. I keep looking for sightings of him abroad or whatever. Anyway, the really strange features here of the story, which there are three different incidents that made me really call into question the legitimacy of the story. So Rose McGowan led the charge. This was the Me Too movement. So the Weinstein scandal was sparked, I believe, by Ronan Farrow, who was supposedly Woody Allen's son, although he looks exactly like Frank Sinatra. And it's kind of ironic that this sexual predator is exposed by the son of someone who is vilified for his what I'm thinking was an illicit relationship. I believe his stepdaughter or adopted daughter or whatever it was, stepdaughter, was underage, Sun Yi, who he later married. Then Ronan Farrow was the one who broke the story. But even that story is about, like, you know, a deep throat, so to speak, an undercover operative who sparked the whole Weinstein thing. So that in itself sounds like a manufactured story. Rose McGowan was the first big story about what this guy did to her. But her story, I dispute, you know, I'm not convinced that her story is true. And he wasn't convicted for anything he did to her. I'll tell you about that in a second. One of the two convictions in New York was, if I'm not mistaken, his on and off girlfriend, Jessica Mann, said she, I guess, did not consent to some sex acts with him. But she, this was what really threw me off. Like, there were a series of emails and texts that Weinstein is probably how it's really supposed to be pronounced, would exchange long after the incident that led to his conviction. And one of them is here. I don't know if this was in the journal article or what. "I love you. I always do. But I hate feeling like a booty call," Mann wrote in a message in February 2017. So this attack was March 2013. And I would say I'm surprised that these things aren't past the statute of limitations or that those were waived, which is terrible because you can't really have a defense so long after the fact. That's the point of that. Weinstein responded to the email telling her he knew she was joking, but not to send things like that to his work email, and gave her his booty phone. I mean, gave her a phone number to contact him going forward. And she emailed back telling him, "Oh, yes, yes, I was joking. I'm super sorry if it was received wrong." And then gave him a new phone number. I guess that was her booty phone or whatever, where he could reach her. So it's a very fishy story, really, really tough one. I don't think a person who was not involved in a PSYOP would get a conviction on something like this. I don't even think it would be brought. And let's see, what else? Oh, the Asia Argento, that was the third thing. She was Anthony Bourdain's girlfriend, and he was like so moved by her story, and he became a real advocate for the Me Too movement. And then she came out as having settled a sexual harassment suit of her own, having slept with a 17-year-old on set, and he sued. Then after Anthony Bourdain died and supposedly committed suicide, I took that at face value at the time, but I said, if anything it gets weird about the Asia Argento story, I'm not going to believe that this guy committed suicide. And only after that did it come out that she had the sexual harassment thing. And then after he died, she said that he paid that guy off, which maybe it happened, but I find it hard to believe. And Anthony Bourdain was dead soon after, because he had a lot of integrity, Anthony Bourdain, from what I can tell. And if he were to poke holes in the story, I mean, the Me Too movement was big and there was a reason for it. I personally think that the reason was primarily, other reasons too, but to sweep men out of positions of power without having to actually convict them of anything. Just accusations alone should be sufficient to remove someone from power. And then at the same time, they had to be replaced. I've talked about this before, like all board seats are now female. They had to be replaced by females. And I don't think that has anything to do with wanting to give people a hand up who really deserve it and have been overlooked. I think it's meant to put people in place who were not, weren't actually at that level and therefore would be more malleable in those positions. It would concentrate, would kind of potentially neutralize boards where if you have all of a sudden 8 out of 10 people are these newbie women who were kind of over promoted in this frenzy, then the chairman who's still got his seat there, he's got them in his pocket potentially. This is my working theory. So I think that Anthony Bourdain may have been offed because of this, but he's not the only one whose suicide related to this case, in my opinion, was questionable. Although her family does not say that it was questionable. They say that she was bipolar and that the her being misrepresented by Rose McGowan and the whole just being a subject of this media frenzy caused her to take her own life. Her name was Jill Messick, and she was an agent of Rose McGowan's. Then the family wrote an article, put out a statement after her death explaining the whole story, and I'm going to read it to you. In January 1997, Jill was an entry-level manager at Addis Wexler. One of her first clients was Rose McGowan, and one of Jill's first duties was to set up a breakfast meeting with Harvey Weinstein during the Sundance Film Festival. Following the meeting, Rose told Jill what had happened, that she made the decision to remove her clothes and get in the hot tub with Harvey, a mistake which Rose immediately regretted. Rose never once used the word rape in that conversation. Despite this, Jill recognized that Harvey had done something untoward to Rose, if not illegal. She immediately went to her bosses, the partners of Addis Wexler, to recount Rose's story and to insist that they immediately address the situation. They told Jill that they would handle the situation. The ensuing arrangements between Rose and Harvey were then negotiated completely without Jill's knowledge. At that time, all Jill knew was that the matter was settled and that Rose continued making films with the Weinsteins. She never knew any details until recently when Rose elected to make them public. 10 months later, Jill was offered a job at Miramax, which was the Weinstein company, but Rose was also making films with Weinstein still. The family goes on to say, what makes Rose's inaccurate accusations and insinuations against Jill ironic was that she was the first person who stood up on Rose's behalf and alerted her bosses to the horrific experience which Rose suffered. 20 years ago, as a very junior person in a management company hierarchy, Jill exhibited her integrity in doing the right thing, et cetera, et cetera. And the family, that was very stand-up of them to do. It sounds like Jill was a super stand-up person. I think Anthony Bourdain was a super stand-up person. And those are the casualties of this kind of a psyop. There are real casualties. But the family goes on to talk about journalists. And it says, words have power. We illuminate the dark corners for hidden truths, but we must remember that what we say, particularly in the media, can have just as much impact, if not more, than our actions. We must ask more of ourselves and of each other. This reminded my mother used to really, she thought it was awful the way journalists had no standards anymore. They would print stuff that was irrelevant, was not newsworthy. And there's that expression, one of the taglines from the big papers, all the news that's fit to print. Well, now it's all the news that's fit to print, but all the news that's unfit to print also. And there's no reason for it. And, you know, it was only when my mother pointed that out that I realized, there is no reason for it. And it's just trashy and also damaging. Anyway, so that story was just one of those things that I knew was kind of screwy. And there you go.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Let's get to some of the other stories in the news today. One was the TikTok ban finally passed as part of the Ukraine aid bill. It says ByteDance, the company's Chinese owner, will have up to a year to sell the app. If it can't or won't, then TikTok will be banned in the U.S. And this was the Speaker of the House, Johnson. I mean, I guess that he's just, it seems like a disaster, this guy. And I'm sure the narrative is that he needed Democrats to get him in that position. So he's like constantly passing these things with more Democrat support than Republican. So that's just the Republican Party's truly jumped the shark now. But of course, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's the like kind of a Kraken type, and Robert Thomas Massey, who is the libertarian type, like they're standing firm. But of course, the minority in a minority I mean, it is a majority. Republicans are a majority in Congress, but it is really the minority party. They're not, they're just there to make it sound like there's somebody fighting the good fight. I'm not saying those guys are not legit. I'm just saying that the role they're playing, whether they know it or not, if they didn't play it, somebody else would play it. But it's just opposition. It's just, you know, powerless opposition. And maybe something will come of it. Maybe this is a setup for, you know, a Trump return to power and all of that. Who knows what they're setting this up. But what I find interesting about the TikTok thing is that Mnuchin, I think he calls it, Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, former Treasury Secretary under Trump, obviously, he was the one who was pushing Trump for this TikTok ban. And he continues to be the most likely suitor. And he wasn't really a politician. He was a Goldman guy. Let me tell you a little bit about him and also tell you about what's happening right now. So Mnuchin wants to buy TikTok in with a consortium of investors that he's put together, including the Saudis and some other Middle Easterners. This says, Mnuchin's involvement has recalled his time as Treasury Secretary when he personally advised President Donald Trump and oversaw a national security investigation as the administration nearly forced the sale of TikTok to companies including Microsoft, Oracle, and Walmart. The role granted Mnuchin rare access to non-public information about the company, including highly classified material about its practices, potentially offering him a critical advantage in any future sale. Senator Ron Wyden, a member of the Intelligence Committee, pledged to, quote, fight very hard against Mnuchin's bid for TikTok. Wyden said he could not discuss the data that would have been available to Mnuchin while he was in government, but the senator stressed that it would be a disgrace if Mnuchin was allowed to turn around and use that classified information to further enrich himself and his Saudi buddies. Now, I'm sure he won't overtly use it. It'll just be in his mind. You know what I mean? Like, all he has to do is know that it's a good deal at X price in his head, and you can just direct it all to, in that direction. It's really awful. And Mnuchin, I didn't even know how deep state this guy was, but I remember thinking, what? When I watched that movie Central Intelligence with The Rock and Kevin Hart, it was actually a very funny movie. I mean, obviously it's called Central Intelligence. It's a spoof, but that's clearly an inside job. Well, Mnuchin, who is an entertainment financier, was a producer of that, you know, bankrolled it. And that's what he does. Like, he is the perfect nexus of, like, finance, government, and media. It's just, that's him. And he is probably going to be the one to emerge by TikTok or fight like hell to get it. But he's skull and bones. I did not know that. He went to Yale, he's skull and bones. He worked at Goldman. He actually worked for George Soros at one time. He was on the board of Sears and was, I think, perhaps sued or involved in some kind of action accusing him of asset stripping, which is something Anthony Raimondo and I talked about regarding a big ag company in California. I think that's probably my most recent interview on the Monica Perez Show feed on your favorite podcasting platform. He's been involved in many Hollywood projects, not just Central Intelligence, but also a movie that I could not get through the first 30 seconds of because it opens with an American, Chris Kyle, shooting a woman and child for being terrorists in their own occupied country. So Mnuchin was behind American Sniper, Sully, The Accountant, Central Intelligence, whatever. I mean, you get the picture. So I would just keep your eyes open for what becomes of TikTok. Cui bono? Who benefits? Let's see. Okie dokie. Oh, here's like a trialectic. Like a... There is an op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal today. Some anti-Israel protesters are paid. Rockefeller and Soros grants are subsidizing those who disrupt college campuses. I mean, for reals. And I'm like, wow, I can't believe they're putting this in the newspaper. Of course, this stuff is AstroTurf. I've been noticing it, and I guess I've been meant to notice it. So I'm going to read a little bit from this article just to lay it out, and then I'm going to tell you like what really put it over the top. So Mr. Afane and Mr. Birkhead Morton have both been, quote, youth fellows at the U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights, whose website identifies them by their first names. As of April 4th, the campaign was soliciting applications for a new cohort whose, quote, campus-based fellows would receive stipends of $2,880 to $3,360 for three-month terms of roughly 8 hours of work a week. That's sweet. That sounds good. That work could include aiding campaigns that, quote, demand federal or state politicians cut U.S. military, financial, or diplomatic ties with Israel. What are these people up to? The corporate entity behind these fellowships is Education for Just Peace in the Middle East. Where does it get its funding? Soros and Rockefeller, for starters. Come on. So then I'm listening to Fox Headline News. So I do my homework for the show. And when I take a break, have lunch or whatever, I put on Fox Headline News just so I know I'm not missing anything that's just like in your face. Like this is, it's like, this is the propaganda that's supposed to pepper your brain. My poor son who has Down syndrome, this school has gotten him into the habit of watching CNN 10 in the mornings, which I'm kind of okay with because it gives me a little opposition research there. But I mean, this kid has Down syndrome. Like what penetrates his noggin is some friggin' like relentless propaganda and training. To train him to do something takes a lot. Trust me, I know. And he's addicted to CNN 10 in the morning. And he's very conversant in current events. It's actually quite hilarious. Really, really funny. Anyway, so I'm listening to Bongina, listening to Fox Headline News, and one of the reporters is quoting Bongino, who is like on a show probably on Fox, or is it just a podcast? I don't know. I don't keep up with this stuff. And he's saying, what was he saying? He was saying that he was pointing out that this stuff was AstroTurf, that it was bankrolled by, I don't know if he mentioned Soros by name, but they're revealing that these protests are, trumped up. And they normally, they won't normally do that because they're not going to say that, like, the Obamacare protests are trumped up. And although, I mean, I participated in them, and there were a lot of organizations behind it that did not want to be, in the forefront. They wanted it to look like a grassroots movement. And boy, I mean, the people who went there were so many people who were definitely sincere. But, obviously there was some promotion of it because when I tried to get the same thing done for the lockdown executive emergency order, those same organizations were not participating. So Bongino was saying the same thing. This thing is being funded by Soros and Rockefeller. And then he gave us a little foreshadowing, which I was just listening to. History Homos was doing a podcast with Richard Booth. I think his name was, it was probably my favorite episode of theirs. It was about the Oklahoma City bombing. They've done a lot of work with him on that. He's from the Libertarian Institute. And Scott was just mentioning that he thinks that the nutty protests on the left will usher in a Trump presidency. And I would say, that's not a crazy thought given how kind of the Vietnam protests probably led to Nixon's overwhelming victory for president. It could definitely be that. But Bongino said, oh, watch this thing bubble over at the Democrat National Convention this year. So there's a little foreshadowing. So Scott is just giving his opinion. Bongino, it's probably his opinion too, but I think this kind of stuff, you're not on Fox saying this stuff without knowing for sure it's within the realm of the Fox, propaganda or whatever. A little predictive programming, I guess. The only thing, I'm not 100% sure that like Trump is going to go in and get elected on that basis is that his, like what he said yesterday or today, his trial started, he's under a gag order, he can't discuss it, and he stopped by some, I don't know, work site or something and was saying, you know, this is unconstitutional restraint of my free speech, this is election interference, blah, blah, blah. So in my mind, whoever is elected, there has to be legitimacy questions about the president. That's the way it's been for at least 20 years, and it's going to continue, in my opinion. So is it that he gets denied the win because he was hamstrung here and that's a legitimacy issue? Or does he get to be president and the legitimacy issue is that he was a rebel and rebels aren't allowed according to the Reformation period, Reconstruction amendments in the Constitution, rebels aren't allowed to hold the office, whatever. I don't know. Insurrectionists. So I don't know. I continue to not. Can I guess the punchline on this one? But that's pretty normal for me. All right. A couple of a strange image that has been promoted quite a bit over the past probably 24 hours. Did you see the horses in London? Four of King Charles's horses who were preparing for his birthday parade escaped and ran amok. They were spooked and they went flying down the roads in London and caused damage, got themselves hurt. A couple of them are undergoing surgery. One of them was a white one. Her name was Vita, I think, was covered in blood. Horrifying onlookers. I mean, there was something so symbolic about this, but I don't understand symbology at all. So I tweeted out to Parallel Mike. He can probably explain it. I'm also interested in what Miri AF has to say, because she has said that she thinks the monarchy is in the crosshairs. And if this is supposed to bring to mind the archaic brutality of the monarchy, and there's no read, like the article I read had a quote from PETA, whatever, about the animals, like there's no reason to have horses like be ridden and stuff. And of course, like when you have domesticated animals, you're not going to just carve off land for them and put them all, like let them roam free. They will no longer exist. So it's like a weird argument. Anyway, but here's the thing. It's just not believable to me. Oh my gosh, yes. Okay, I can't wait to get to the comments here. Sometimes I just don't see the forest for the trees. So let's hear what y'all say, because it sounds like people have cracked the code here. But it just was so unlikely to me that this would happen. I mean, this is obviously, this is probably like a 1,000-year-old tradition to, or at least practice. These institutions, these rituals were horse-driven. And these guys know how to handle them. I mean, it's just not believable. So here's a quote. British Defense Minister James Cartledge told radio station LBC the affair was a shock to all involved, emphasizing that it was an exceptional situation. What did he say? He said, "You are probably aware that the army has horses out on exercise in central London every day of the week. It is about 150 horses on average exercising every day. So this is extremely unlikely, this scenario. Extremely unlikely that the story, the official story," this is the defense minister saying this. Yeah, extremely unlikely that the official narrative is the true story. I mean, he didn't add that little part at the end, but that's what we're hearing here. So, okay, I have, I wanted to just mention the FISA thing because Joe pointed out this story. FISA was passed, Foreign Intelligence Services Act. That means it is time for the comments. Let's just do this real quick. So again, Johnson, the speaker, in action, doing stuff that the Republicans don't like. So all of a sudden, the Republicans want the rights and the Democrats want the security at any cost. Interesting. So they approved the bill and he was a little bit in trouble with the Republicans. The issue is that if they wanted to pass an amendment that if you're spying on Americans, you have to have a warrant. And this bill, when the amendment did not pass, so it continues to be true that if you are communicating with a foreign surveillance target, now it is unclear to me if that target needs to actually be in another country. But if you're communicating with that person, you can, the government can sweep that stuff up without a warrant. But here's the thing, like, what makes somebody a target? All foreigners? I mean, it's quite possible that all foreigners are targets. And here's the big problem here, though, is that Judge Napolitano said this on Fox. So you've got a kind of mainstream outlet. This isn't just conspiranoid, you know, gobbledygook. He said, not that conspiranoia is gobbledygook. It's usually true, but or at least it has a lot of truth in it. And then they'll throw something kooky in it so that it discredits the whole story. That's the MO anyway. But what he said is that all these countries, all the echelon countries, the Five Eyes countries, the English-speaking, you know, British Empire countries, and I'm including the US, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, UK, and I don't know if South Africa is included there, but they all have these laws. And there's no restriction on sharing it with other countries. So the UK can target Americans and then share what they come up with us. We can't do it ourselves, but we can get the information from them. Likewise, we can give the information. So you think foreigners, you think, you know, turbans and beards, but it's quite possible. It's simply just basically any citizen of a foreign country. And then they do this little quid pro quo. What's annoying to me, okay, so Thomas Massie said that Johnson, the speaker, had the deciding vote to keep it as is. Also, the one concession that was achieved was they made the renewal period 2 years instead of 5 years in order to, quote, give Trump an at-bat because Trump is the one who is saying, like, kill FISA, okay? However, as president, Trump signed a renewal of Section 702 and his administration had unsuccessfully sought a permanent renewal of it from Congress. Permanent. Arguing that intelligence agencies need stability for such a vital surveillance program. So this stuff, attributing all this heroic stuff to Trump, is misguided. Truly. Okay. So let us get to comments. Oh, Kelvin, a Frank Herbert quote. I'm in the process of re-watching The Dunes, which, by the way, Mnuchin's company name was called Dune Entertainment, but only because of his beachfront property in the Hamptons. I was like, wow, he's a Dune fan. I was going to watch Dune 2, but it's like $25 to rent, and I heard it wasn't as good as the first one, so I'm going to wait until it's $5 to rent. Kelvin says, Frank Herbert, absolute power does not corrupt absolutely. Absolute power attracts the corruptible. That is so true. That's what I've always said. If Obama's your hero or Trump's your hero and you want to bend the rules for that guy and set a precedent, you can be sure that someone who wants that kind of power is going to seek that office. Too true, too true. True. Good old 322. That is the skull and bones. Maverick says, I think it's pretty clear by now, with the exception of the immediate circle around Biden, the path for Trump to be selected in November seems to be in play. Maybe to have him holding the booby-trapped bag. Could be to hold the booby-trapped bag, or it could be just, yeah, if something happens, if there is one of the things that Booth was saying in that podcast was that Peter Dale Scott is worried about a societally restructuring event, like 9/11, JFK, like that worries me for sure. But if you get something like that, you know, Leviathan just feeds on that. And if you have someone strong in office who doesn't care, like a Caesar type, or that's the image, the persona, like Trump, I mean, and he's got a cult of personality who has never cared about his neglect of the Bill of Rights, it's not good. It's not good. You're actually, the contrary law of democracy will kick in where only your party can bring you the thing you fear the most because you're on guard when it's the opposite party. Yes, Karen, the white horse covered in blood. How could I not realize there's four horses running amok in the city? Oh my gosh, Squidgy says the same thing. Four horses, Yeah, Maverick says there may be some symbology there, but the four horsemen symbology is being hijacked. And does the royal crest have a white horse on it? Oh, there's a white unicorn on Charles's. What was that all about? I forget why. Yes, it's the pale horse that we're thinking. That's the death, right? Isn't the pale horse death? Yes, a dehorned unicorn. Maverick says he's also afraid of a larger scale false flag. He does not fear, rather, he trusts in the creator and savior to sustain. Yes, but that apocalyptic stuff does seem scary. Yes, Trump does speak with a forked tongue. Really, literally, both things come out of his mouth like all the time. That's his signature thing. But there are also, and I'm sure there are nice people, or they're good people on both sides. Interesting. Okay. I'll give you a couple more stories. And then my last story is the story for the clip. There is, I think I did pretty well. I'm drinking my Lebanese white coffee, which is made of orange blossom water. I just love it. I feel like it gets me in touch with my heritage. Although I'm not Lebanese, my grandmother was Syrian, but she was an orphan in an Irish convent. Did I ever tell you this? Like, she had kinky black hair and a brogue. Actually, my mother is Irish and she has kinky black hair too, but she blamed that on the Spanish Armada. Okay. The U.S. fertility rate falls to a record low. It has not been this low since 1979. And my question, oh, by the way, I'll put this in the show notes. Ken sent me after the last time we were talking about the, I played that Orban quote about the migration plan coming out of Soros for the EU. He sent me the UN plan for replacement migration to deal with the demographic bust in Western countries. And it has different scenarios and how to deal with it. And it's pretty chilling. And it's also pretty clear that they're following this script. But here's the thing. I think they also go out of their way to have policies and propaganda that suppress the procreation among the people who are already living here. So they want the replacement migration, and they say it's because of the demographic bust, but they promote the demographic bust. So this fertility bust, I'm wondering, it never says, it acts like it assumes that this is all choice. And I would like, I seriously suspect that the fertility bust is about reduced fertility from the probably COVID as well as the vaccines, both things, both of which are artificial, in my opinion. And I thought one way to see would be to see if IVF rates are up, people trying to do fertility treatments that they don't want. They want to have the babies, they just can't. I mean, do we think that seems... do we not agree with that? Okay, what else was there? Oh, there was a child exploitation thing. There was another article in the journal about child exploitation. And they're talking about the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. They can't do their job because they're getting overwhelmed by reports from like big tech of child exploitation because there's been such a push for that. They just slip into this article that a lot of them are false reports. So big tech's overwhelming this institution. And the institution is complaining, not so much about that, but that they can't transmit their images electronically. And I was like, yes, good. You shouldn't. Because just like Maverick was saying, people who want power pursue power. People who like kiddie porn are going to want to be in this field. I mean, I'm sure that most of the people are legit, but I'm also sure that some people aren't. It's like the junkie becoming a nurse. This I've seen myself. So, and another History Almost show on the Finders was about a lot of that pedophilia stuff inside the government. And what about Denny Hester? There's a lot of that stuff. And I'm not like on the pedo bandwagon. I think that that makes it a totally partisan thing, and half the people aren't going to care about it because it just sounds conspiranoid. But I don't want them to be able to communicate these images electronically. Absolutely not. And what's their clearing rate anyway? What good is it going to do? How much do they actually get done? I have my doubts about that. And I actually have my doubts about the trafficking stories at all. Like, I don't know. I don't believe these stories. But anyway, the upshot is they want to change that law. And they want to give an excuse to big tech that they cannot offer encryption to us. It's just for the children, you know, for the children. You have to be under total surveillance at all time. Okay. So before I get to the clip, which is the last story, about Tejas and Donbass, I want to tell people, you can find me at monicaperezshow.com. I think my name changed. I thought it would be a plus, but it seems to have screwed up my feed. So if you think you're subscribed, you're probably not. I think a lot of my subscriptions got wiped out. So go to Monica Perez Show, subscribe, please. Please give me a review. I would love that. And also, if you want to support me, it would be great for you to support TrueHempScience.com, who has always been a great supporter of the show and has the highest quality CBD products for sure. So check that out. All right, here's the story. Last story of the day is, I think I talked about Russell Bentley, Tejas in Donbass, like the last show I did, certainly the last time I mentioned Ukraine, because I said, and you'll remember because I think I mentioned the River Dnieper. I probably did not know how to pronounce it. Dnieper goes through Kiev and it bifurcates, not evenly, but it bifurcates Ukraine. And Tejas in Donbass said from the beginning, that's going to be the dividing line. The East is going to go with Russia and the West is going to stay in the West. And I was wondering if we were getting to that point. Russell Bentley, he's from Dallas. He went over to Ukraine, I think like 10 years ago when the coup happened, because I was covering it back then. I didn't know him back then, but I've known about him since then. And I actually wanted to get him on my show at one point, but I just couldn't track him down, and his YouTube channel went away and it was just harder to reach him. But he was fighting over there. He had been in the service here and he was over there fighting. And then recently, maybe last year, he became a journalist with Sputnik. He converted to Orthodox. He married a Ukrainian chick, Eastern Ukrainian chick, Russian speaking person, woman. And he always did dangerous work, but he was in the Rolling Stone. There was like a lot of articles about him calling him a leftist or whatever. And maybe he was. He did a lot of humanitarian stuff. I mean, there were plenty of people with their hearts in the right places who had that political ideology, and he was one of them. So he disappeared maybe 2 weeks ago, and they've determined that he's dead. I don't know if he was found dead or if his body was returned. It's really, really heartbreaking. I mean, it's as hard as Zach Arshenko, if you want to ever look him up. So it's really awful. And the Wall Street Journal was covering it today to my amazement, but not to my amazement. And this is just anything you look up, even if you just try to find this guy's channel, anything about him, you're just flooded with this preposterous story of how he got dead. And the story is that Russian troops, probably with the 5th Division, but wearing uniforms, thought that this guy a Sputnik reporter, famous, was an American spy, even though he had his documents on him. He had a Russian passport. He had Russian, the Russians gave him citizenship. And the story so far isn't that it was the Russians as a whole, or Putin or whatever, decided to run mad. It's like some idiots on the ground. And here's where it becomes absolutely, you know who did it. You know, those guys were wearing uniforms who were not Russian. They were no doubt Nazis, because supposedly they kidnapped him and raped him. You know, a 65-year-old man, you would do that purely out of depravity and torture and whatever. Like, if that's true, I pray to God that it is not true, but apparently it is true that he's dead. And some people are saying his wife is saying that the Russians did it. And I think she'd have to be a hostage herself to be saying that. I mean, I guess they, I mean, it could be they're at the bottom of the barrel with some of these Russian soldiers. I don't know, but I for one, do not believe for one second that the Russians took this guy out. But I do believe he was taken out by Western Ukraine. And his name is Russell Bentley. And here is, I'm going to play a clip, I'll leave you with this, of him on a show called Elena USA Live. This was about a year ago. You tell me, you listen to what he has to say. You tell me if you think this is a guy, journalist for Sputnik, that the Russians took out.
And it's the civilians that are getting hit in Donetsk. I mean, the soldiers are on the front line, you know? And yeah, that's what, I mean, it's not that far from Petrovsky, but, you know, but there's definitely a difference between the front line in Mariinka or Alexandrovka and, you know, Petrovsky district, where, you know, people are going to the grocery store, kids are going to school, you know, I mean, you know, people are going to church on the weekends, on Sunday. You know, it's just genuine terrorism, man.
It is.
And, you know, people, Americans need to know, like, when we're talking about their tax dollars and stuff, you know, the U.S. military budget now is almost $800 billion a year.
Lost, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And so they have given, in the last year, they have given Ukraine over $100 billion worth of military equipment and support. And the people in America need to also understand that the entire national military budget of Russia is like $70
billion. Yep.
And so the United States has given Ukraine 150% of the entire Russian military budget in the last year, you know, and I mean, even, and that's a huge, I mean, that's over $100 billion, you know, and when you see all the things, I mean, maybe if the United States had been spending money on fixing their railroads, those people in East Palestine, Ohio, wouldn't have to be thinking about moving or getting cancer if they stay there because of the chemical spill from the train derailment, you know? I mean, there's so much things that need to be fixed in the United States, and yet some idiot, you know, is sending $100 billion, you know, to a Nazi regime that doesn't help the United States in any way, you know, that only makes things for the U.S. and for the whole world worse, because, you know, the more that they continue to escalate and provoke Russia and to continue this war that the United States started 9 years ago, you know, the war didn't start a year ago. It started 9 years ago with the Maidan. And the more they continue to escalate and provoke this war, it brings us every bit closer to, you know, Armageddon, to nuclear exchanges and the end of humanity. And it's a very deadly, serious threat. And, you know, and the people who own and control the U.S. government and the U.S. military are sending $100 billion to make things worse.
You know, I mean, when you speak about the repeat of history, it's interesting because, you know, 100 years ago, it was the Russian Civil War. I mean, between the Red Army and the White Army. And a lot of people in the West, they don't know that during the Civil War, you know, there was 100,000 foreign troops that came here, including British, including Americans, including French, that were fighting right here, you know, in Crimea, in the Donbass, you know, and I mean, and all over Russia and the Far East too, you know, but, you know, the same countries that invaded Russia in the Civil War 100 years ago are the same ones that are lining up again and are, I mean, and already have invaded because, you know what, I mean, I don't know how many Japanese there are, but there are definitely thousands of Americans, thousands of British, thousands of French, you know.
Polish soldiers out there, and yeah, they're from all over, even from other former Soviet republics too. Azerbaijanians, yeah. Some Armenians, I've seen Georgians, people from all over the world, yeah. Fighting on the side of Ukraine as mercenaries or volunteers.
Including ISIS, which is very important that people understand because, I mean, and I was telling people about it from 2015, you know. I mean, it was a known fact back then, or at least early 2016. Sheikh Mansour Battalion, whatever that was, those are ISIS cannibals, you know. They came from Syria, they came from Iraq. You know, these are, you know, the worst terrorists in the world. And the thing is, these jihadi cannibals were paid, trained, armed, and directed by the same people that created the Ukrainian Nazis, you know, which is the CIA, American NATO secret services and military. And so, of course, they do the same, you know, kind of dirty tricks, the same kind of terrorist attacks. And I mean, and it's, and the escalations continue. I mean, there was some horrific videos released recently about the Ukrainians creating and using chemical weapons. I mean, that's a documented fact now. I mean, everyone, you know, everyone that is well-informed knows now that the United States was working on biological weapons in multiple laboratories in Ukraine before the special operations started. Those labs have now been moved mainly to Georgia and supposedly also to Moldova. You know, so, I mean, what else is there? You know, I mean, are they going to start throwing nuclear bombs around? Which, in fact, the Russians did find a couple of, like, low-yield high radioactivity dirty bombs when they first came in, when they took Chernobyl, when they took the Gostomel airport, and when they took the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. They found dirty bombs. They found, at least in some of those places, dirty bombs, and in others, in Zaporizhia, it was more like the evidence that they were trying to create one there as well. But in Chernobyl and in Gostomel, you know, there's very strong evidence that they actually found them and they took them out, you know.